This is AJ Sound Booth, the podcast.
I'm Antonia Jones. Music, entertainment, arts, culture. Phoenix
FM. AJ Sound Booth.
AJ Sound Booth.
Then the next day I got the call. They were like, oh, your mate got a recall.
Wow.
I saw my housemate and said, I'm not going to go. I said, I can't go. They're like, what do you mean? I said, I'm just in my head. I said, I can't go. I have anxiety. I said, I don't know if this is for me. Robin, I don't even know where to start. She passed away last year. I've never met anyone like her before in my life. I never thought I would shake the feeling of the hole she left in my heart. And everything I do now is for her. She pushed me. She reminded me never to give up.
So welcome, Emmanuel Akwafo, to AJ Sound Booth. You're starring in For Black Boys Who Have Considered Suicide When the Hue Gets Too Heavy. I love the title.
First of all, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I love the title too. I've not heard a title like it before for a show. So that was definitely one thing that drew me towards it.
So how did you get into theatre? Because I know that 100 or more people auditioned and there are 6 characters in the cast, and I know you play Pitch.
Yeah.
And I came along and I was astounded by the performance, the highlights, all of the issues that were covered. But for you, being in theatre, like, how did you start off initially?
I've been acting for such a long time, since the age of like 6, and I fell into it by chance. It was one of the, I was in primary school and we were doing a school production, and the teacher was like, oh, we need a boy to sing. No, it wasn't even a boy. We need someone to sing, and no one wanted to sing. And I was like, oh, miss, I'll have a go at it. And I sang. She was just like, oh my gosh. Your voice. Ooh. Back then, obviously, my voice ain't cracked, so I could really hit the high notes. And then I got to year 6, and I wasn't afraid. I was one of those children, I just wasn't afraid. And my teacher was just like, oh, we're doing like a goodbye show to one of our teachers, Miss Baradugo. Would you be interested in playing Miss Baradugo? I was like, me playing Miss Baradugo? I said, yeah, of course. So I remember like putting on a wig, putting on some leggings and a top, like they blew up these balloons for my chest, and I played Miss Baradugo the house down. And then my head teacher was like, he needs to get into acting, like convince my mum. Mum was like, oh, what's acting like, what's gonna happen? Luckily enough, my head teacher had connections with BBC, so I did a couple of auditions for them, and it just grew from there.
Well, and that's the most important part. You have those kind of groundbreaking moments in life. So for me, I remember going to a TV studio and then being behind the scenes, and it felt like magic to me.
Yeah.
So I get what you mean. But I'm intrigued. What song did you actually sing? I won't get you to sing it, but you can hum it, mate.
I sung I'm Every Woman.
Oh, really? But did you sing it with your chest?
I sang it with so much conviction. Yeah.
So that was that moment for you. So being in the production at the Royal Theatre, Royal Court Theatre, out of the 100 or more so people that auditioned, like, what was it like getting that phone call to say that you are playing the part in this West End production?
I had the most strange experience with auditioning. The audition happened just after the pandemic ended. And I was in my feelings. I didn't want to be an actor anymore. I wanted to try something else. And I just had something like eating up away at me. It was like, oh my gosh, but like, you're a performer, you need to act. I was just like, yeah, but I also need to pay rent. So I remember talking to my housemates and they were just like, oh, like, give it one more go. And I was like, yeah, but my agent ain't doing anything and I'm not finding the jobs that I want. Then randomly I saw this post on Instagram. And it was like, for black boys who consider suicide when the hue gets too heavy. I was reading it. I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds really interesting. Saw Tristan was directing it, seen his body of work. And I've always wanted to work with Tristan. So I said, oh, I'm going to apply. tried to tell my agent I've applied for this show. My agent was just like, oh, but we want to do Netflix. We want to do this. I was like, yeah, but I want to do theatre. So she didn't really say much. Applied. Didn't think much of it. Got an audition. When I read the breakdown, I said, oh, Lord Jesus. I said, what have I got myself into? It was like, be prepared to sweat. Full body movement. Lines learning. I was like, oh, Lord. I was like, how? No one's moved in the pandemic. The only thing I've moved is the bathroom to my bedroom.
A little trip, I know. I've made a few of those trips.
Yeah, like the body was not flexible. Learning lines was just, I couldn't fathom the thought. I went anyways, and oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I was in a room of 10 beautiful black young men. And we just got challenged to move, do improvisation, and then at the end, do script. And, oh, gosh, it was a magical experience because I said I've never been to an audition like this before in my life where I felt like I've come home. I felt like family, the creativity was just in the room. Tristan was not joking around. He was pushing us to the fullest. And then I remember going home. My housemates were like, how did it go? And I was like, guys, my body is hurting. I said, I don't think I've made it to the second round, but yeah, we'll see. Then the next day I got a call. They were like, oh, you mate got a recall.
Wow.
I saw my housemates. I said, I'm not going to go. I said, I can't go. They're like, what do you mean? I said, I'm just in my head. I said, I can't go. I have anxiety. I said, I don't know if this is for me. And they were just like, no, you need to go. You need to go. I said, look at this big, like, monologue that I've got to learn. I said, I've got to learn lines. They're like, yeah, let's do it. So I remember, like, I was sitting at home on Netflix, and then my housemate would come in and be like, who learned those lines? I said, oh, yeah, I need to learn them. She was like, turn off the laptop, we're learning them. I was like, oh.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, they really, I mean, God's blessing, but my housemate Louis and my housemate Tish whipped me into shape. And yeah, went to the second one, had a moment, had a cry in my head again. And I just left feeling like whatever happened will happen. And then Tristan called me and was like, you got the part.
Wow. And it's moments like that where I would say when you're so close to kind of living the dream, where you feel sometimes so afraid.
Yeah.
And it can be daunting. But the thing that you fear the most, if you go ahead and do it, then you see the opening. Because if we knew everything in life and we can't continue to do it, yeah, we probably wouldn't do anything. If I knew my whole life, I'd be like, no. It's all right. I'm just going to sit here. And we'll be planning everything. But that is just amazing to know that you followed it through. And it will be so inspirational for others to know that. And to see you on stage and see the lines and see the whole cast. Just, I was just like, how do you all remember these lines?
So much lines.
There's so much. But it's the movement, the artistic movement and just everything. It really came to life. And in such a small space.
Yeah.
So tell us about your character within the play and your contribution to that. And what does that mean on a wider scale to the whole production?
So my character, do you know what? It's the writing is so good. The character is in the writing. Regardless if I played it or another actor played it, it would be similar. And Ryan's writing is so amazing because all of these guys are different. It's weird. Let me explain it. So obviously it's come from Ryan's head, but it's like he's written it that as if different men were writing it.
Yes, I get you, because there's different characters.
Yeah.
And to be that one individual to have so many different characters.
Yeah. It's like,
it's not easy.
Obviously, when you read Shakespeare, you kind of go, oh, all of this just sounds like Shakespeare. But you read this and you're like, I'm confused. This sounds like another person, this sounds like another person or another playwright. Like it sounded like a collection of different playwrights all together, and it had different voices. So my character Pitch, he's eclectic, he's like a skater boy, he's not afraid, he knows he stands out from the rest. He's not a road man, he's not a sweet boy, he's one of those people where he's just gone through life questioning what is black and why do I not fit in with every other black person.
And then just seeing how your character came to life, it's kind of, I could see it emulated you as a person. So when I see actors or actresses on stage, I see that they kind of live that experience. It seems like that is part of their character. I don't know how hard it is. It has to become you. How do you find that kind of place where you can switch on and switch off? Because there was a lot of issues that were covered. I could see homosexuality. I could see just within the play itself, there was things that dealt with kind of sexual abuse. There was family issues, from parental issues, the father not being there. There was a lot. So there was contemplation of suicide. There was so much going on.
A lot, yeah.
And I was taking it all in at one time. And like for you, how does it feel to kind of switch from being Emmanuel to Pitch?
Do you know what? It's not easy. It's not easy. I think the rehearsal was a whole month long. So we broke down the script. We broke down the characters. And to really find the truth and to play the truth, you have to bring a part of you as the person into the character. And it's you blurring the lines between acting and playing the truth. And that's one thing Ryan said to us was, play the truth, find the truth, play the truth. There's no point going on stage and acting and not believing it, because you're going to see it. So for me, I had to pull down the memories where I was called a bounty, or people said, oh, you don't act like all of the other black people. Like, I feel like every character has a truthful part to them. And just like family issues, sexual abuse, I had to find those dark parts in my life to pull from it, to understand what the characters are going through. How can I relate? How am I taking in the story? And me as a character, reacting to other people's stories.
Yes. And so how do you think it is for like young black boys to feel like they do today in this culture, in this society, having played that character? You've relived it. I know it's a bit of a simple question, but are they actually going through all of these kind of issues that you are presenting? I know we're looking more into this and how black boys feel from the school system, from younger children, but playing that, how are they actually feeling?
I think it's almost like a wake-up call. I always say this show is like church or therapy. And I say church because when you go to church, the Bible is relayed to you. And obviously, even though you wasn't there, you take what you take from it. Same with this show. Even though you may not have gone through what the characters are going through, you take what you need from it. And it's a healing at the end of the day. At the end of the show, I feel like everyone leaves healed.
Yes.
Or a sense of, wow, I didn't know I was feeling that until it was relayed to me. And now I understand what those feelings are.
Yeah, and that's how I felt as it ended. I remember someone speaking on the mic saying, you've got some time to reflect.
Yeah.
And at that moment when you all came together as a cast, I actually felt it there. And I thought, wow, I could actually sit here for 15 minutes. But what I did, I went out because I thought that was a lot. And I felt the emotions. It felt so real.
Yeah.
But again, what do I do? And I say that about any play when I leave. What do I do when I come away from a theatre? Because you were touching on so many different issues. And credit to the whole production, the directors, the cast, the quirkiness.
Yeah.
I love the quirkiness in the production, the songs. It was just really funny. But you kind of drew us into the seriousness, the quirkiness, the jokes.
It's a roller coaster.
It was a roller coaster. After the interval, I was thinking, what next? So what do you enjoy most about playing your part? Because you are playing your part right now as we speak. I can't say what did you, but
what do I enjoy how relatable he is. I think it's hard because I'm a comedic person at heart, and I've made my character that joyful comedicness I have. And I hate talking about things that make me sad. And I think that's one thing that Pitch brings out of me, is the moments where sometimes I just need to stop and cry, because emotions have built up. So that sometimes I live through my character, but it's like, I go, oh my gosh, sometimes I just need to lay it out. And it's like, a lot of the time I put on a face and I'm a clown because I don't want to talk about the real issues. But Pitch is like, no, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Today, let's talk about it. So I'm grateful for that sense.
Yeah. And I think that everyone needs a Pitch in their lives. Yeah. That's kind of how I saw it. I was like, oh, Pitch has just got such an amazing character along with the others. And you all had that synergy together. And I felt like it was just so real. And I'm glad that this play is starting those conversations on this particular topic, but then also to help to revisit some conversations as well. Yeah. And looking at Ryan Calais Cameron, he wrote and directed the play along with, you know, his team as well. And I was reading that it took about 10 years to develop this idea.
Yeah.
And it does take some time. And for what I saw, well, you know, I'm astounded. And as you say, the different characters. And just imagine writing, and then you're writing, you're going in between, back and forth, a whole life story. And this also has reflection upon the killing of Trayvon Martin in 2013. And it also has foundations in that as well. So currently in the UK, and there was a part in the play where the cast were talking about the police and being stopped. And I just think of a journey from a young boy who is, you know, on his way growing up into teenagehood, then manhood, and what they have to face. But I'm a female. I've never experienced that. Yeah. And it's not easy.
No, it's not easy.
And it's great to have seen that be relived. But what do you do about it? It's like, well, yeah, it's fantastic.
This is the thing. It's, we've now getting to a point in society, like when I have children, am I going to be telling my children, right, this is how the world works. You're going to get stopped. You can't talk back. And it is scary because way back when, even though certain things happen where they're like, oh, you're free, you get to do what you need to do, not really, because I truly believe like segregation happened for money. They saw black people were thriving and making their own money, and they were like, hold on, we don't want these people to take over, so let's do segregation so their money can go back into our money and a happy day. That's what I truly believe. And I feel like because of stuff like that, we still have the conversations of we don't feel comfortable where we should feel comfortable. The conversations of, oh, you need to go back to wherever you came from. I was born here. I can't help that I'm born here.
Yeah.
But you make me feel uncomfortable. For what reason? Someone has taught you to make me feel uncomfortable.
And that's where it comes from. And there's so many different theories. And it's just understanding the different cultures and why we do things the way we do. We're educated in a different way. Yeah. We're brought up from the home. There's a practice that you may have, for example, you know, when you get up in the morning, simple things from like you've got to brush your teeth to, you know, you're sitting down at the table eating. Different cultures do different things. Yeah. And it's just understanding, and it's breaking down those barriers. So for that kind of young boy and them having the suicidal thoughts, the issues that were revisited, I can see the struggles going to school. One of the characters was talking about being at school, teachers, you got the pressure from the teachers, not having the dad at home, someone to look up to. Then you come out and then you're judged by what you're wearing, by the police, for example. If you're suspicious, you know, you could just be in the wrong place.
At the wrong time, yeah.
At the wrong time. And it's all of that stuff. So for that to be promoted in the play, it's interesting to see that we're revisiting this again. Even like there's so many killings and deaths that are happening amongst the community, and there's lots of support services to stop that. But again, the subject of mental health and always rears its head, and how, as you know, as a community, black people can support black boys as well, because again, as you say, you cry, and it's like, no, we shouldn't cry.
Yeah.
So
be a man or whatever.
And that's like, and so what is a man? I'm a female, but what is a man? Do you get what I mean?
A man is whatever you want a man to be. But it's one of those things where even me growing up, if I ever said to my parents, oh, I need to see therapy, or I'm feeling these type of thoughts, the first thing they'll say to me is, oh, pray and everything will be fine. But sometimes, even though prayer will help, church will help, sometimes all it takes is someone to sit down with you and talk through those feelings and say, these are natural feelings that you're having. These are the steps you can take. That's all it takes.
No, definitely.
That's all it takes. But we don't have those conversations with our parents. If I could be this open with my parents when I was younger, oh my gosh, life would be so different.
Life would be different. But then it goes back to the culture of the parents' upbringing as well. And that is not a negative thing.
No.
But it's just, we're in a different generation. There's like Gen Z. Yeah. There's so many different generations.
Listen, I'm learning new things every day.
With different names. Yeah. But then we've got like the era now of the Instagram and more, we're all digital online. But opposed to when our parents were growing up, no, they didn't have that. And it's slightly different. So we're learning different behaviors, learning more about people's different experiences. And I think that's where our knowledge base comes from. And I would say this generation is really quick, very fast in learning.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how it kind of works. So onto your critics. It's a long list. It is a long list. Well, I was reading it. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Out of the credits that you've got, we've got one about you've got the host of the favorites. And I didn't want to name your favorites, but which of your favorites have you been in apart from the current play that you're in? and why?
Oh no. This is hands down my favorite, by the way, just to say.
Okay.
Another career highlight. I did a show called The Spalding Suite, directed by Benji Reed. And that was when I truly came into my power and I said, oh my gosh, me as a black male actor, there's a lot you could do with acting. And the show is quite similar to this. The show was about a group of young men who all had issues in their life, but they found friendship through basketball. I played a similar character, kind of. I played a character who came out to his parents. His parents didn't want to accept him, so he found family with this brotherhood, but he couldn't play basketball to save his life. So he forced himself to play basketball just so he can have this family with this group of guys. So it's, yeah, kind of similar. I don't know how I draw myself to these type of productions, but it's apparently a message I want to portray that.
But then again, it's what you feel that you can kind of portray and then bring across. So your character, Pitch, really brought across, you know, all of the emotions. And, you know, what a better person, because you have the role. It's yours. Yes. It's yours. So I know that as part of the theatre, there is like a creative space, as you said, after lockdown, and there was a creative space identified for people from the Afro-Caribbean and African community to go and actually act and have that space. Do you know, have you had much dealings with that?
Do you know what? I haven't. But it's weird because I feel like now I'm starting to learn of workshops that happen. Before, I wasn't really aware of it, or I don't know, maybe I just wasn't looking hard enough. But there are some out there who do workshops. Identity School of Acting was a big one that do like acting workshops for people to come together. Our co-director Tristan, he has his own The Queer Playground for black queer people to come together, and that was the first I've ever heard of that. And I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So there are. You just need to look.
And it's good because it's specialist, and some might say, no, we don't need specialist spaces. No, but it's good to have a space where you have like-minded people. And there's so many programs, and I think that they're important as well culturally, because if you are leading and you are from a particular culture, then that helps to kind of reinforce the message again, a bit like the role models. Yeah. It just makes sense. It's, you know, I don't see any issues with that. It's important for growing up and growing up as a person, maturing in a creative space. That's how I see it, really. So, as I said, Instagram time.
Oh, gosh, here we go.
So you've got this amazing picture. You are at the Royal Court Theatre, standing on stage, this, it's a portrait picture of you, the camera's behind you, and it's like you have the whole world. You are on stage. That is it. It has come to life. And then you talk about your inspiration and you've this admiration for Robin Taylor. And as I said, we all always need a little manual in our lives. So Robin Taylor, please tell us, because I'm intrigued now.
Robin, I don't even know where to start. She passed away last year. I've never met anyone like her before in my life. We met when we were like, I want to say 16, at a drama school, weekend drama school called Walk Tour in Northfleet. And I remember when we met, there was just a spark. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is someone who's going to be in my life for the longest time. And we got cast in Midsummer Night's Dream. I played Oberon, she played my wife. It was the first time doing Shakespeare too, and it was like a hip hop version of Shakespeare. So,
wow.
Boy, it was an experience. Bear in mind, we were 16. And she just kind of taught me everything I knew about how to learn lines and how to make a character your own. And I remember this one time, it happens throughout the whole run. But there's a bit where we're not in the show for like three scenes. So we used to run to the green room and we used to mix orange juice and red wine together. She was like, this is red heaven. She was like, drink it, it'll give you courage. Bear in mind, I was 16. I was like, oh, okay. And those memories. But she was my best friend. We spoke about opening a cafe together. We lived together. We act together. We sang together. She was an amazing jazz singer. But yeah, last year she had a car accident and I lost her. And I never thought I would shake the feeling of the hole she left in my heart. And everything I do now is for her. She pushed me. She reminded me never to give up on my dream. And I always feel like she's always looking down on me. So, yeah.
And as I said, and I kind of went on to a subject about inspiration. And there's so many people that touch our lives. And it's important to live on. As you say, you wanted to put down the play script. And you thought, yeah. No, I'm not going to go back to the second audition. But I would say, what would Robin say? With people in my lives who have passed on. What would they say? Okay. No, they'll say, carry on, fight on.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing memory to have. And that's what stuck up to me. And just that inspiration. So for you, apart from, you know, Robin and, you know, her just kind of giving you that, I'll say, a whooping. I'm loving them cocktails, though.
Yeah.
After hours. Okay, so apart from that, where do you draw your inspiration for life, depicting on your experiences as a Black boy growing up to a wise man in this industry? Because I would say you're pretty wise, really? From what I pick up from your posts and things like that and your inspirational messages.
My mother, she, again, like Robin, had so much faith in me. She had such a hard life as it is. Her strength, I don't know where she gets it from. Her strength just reminded me I could do anything that I want to do, reminding me that I'm a king. Always being proud of me, whatever avenue I go down. My mum. You're making me in my feelings.
Oh, in your feelings. Do you know what? You can be in your feelings, you know? But yeah. What is it from your mum? Like, I've got quotes that my mum would always say to me, like, Rome wasn't built in a day. Because sometimes I want to do everything. And I always remember that. And, you know, you're not made of stone. And all of that stuff, you know, you are an emotional person. You can live through life. So out of that, what is the kind of key thing for you? Like her funny kind of quotes?
You are going to laugh at this. My mom, I don't know where she got this from too, but I got to that age where you ask a lot of questions like, oh, why does this happen? Like, why does that happen? She always used to say, because why has a long tail?
Because why has a long tail?
It made no sense.
Even I'm thinking.
Yeah, it used to get me so angry. I used to be like, what? What do you mean, why has a long tail? She's like, yeah, because why has a long tail? I'm a mum. But I said, I just want to know these answers. She's like, you have to figure out yourself.
No, but that is a good point that she makes, because it makes me start thinking, why?
Yeah, why?
What does it mean? Yeah. Okay, I get that a bit. Okay, then. Yes.
Yeah.
So that is good. So just kind of circling back, depicting on your experiences growing up as a man in this industry, right? You've got all of that. Why has a big tail? You've experienced, you've gone through the doors, I say the doors of life, and you're there, and you're going to face so many challenges, or you have faced so many challenges. How can you kind of function and be you? Like, what has it been like to this point?
It's been challenging. Every day I'm learning something new. Even being at the Royal Court and having this platform and speaking my truth, I'm still faced with microaggression. I'm still faced with people not having faith in me. I had people like in my past life say, oh my gosh, I still can't believe you're acting. I would have thought you'd given it up. Why do you even have those negative thoughts in your head?
That is very negative.
Yeah. Yep. I even had one person message me, was just like, oh, the Royal Court is not that impressive. I was like, yeah. I was like, come. You know what? You don't even get.
That's it. No airtime.
Yeah. But you do get it. You always have. I feel like whatever success you have, you're always going to have someone wanted to bring you down because they're like, oh, you're too big for your boots. But don't give into it. Just keep pushing forward. And whatever happens, happens. Even if I don't act after the show, what I'm leaving on the stage is my legacy.
And also what you kind of leave behind is that I would say we need those type of people in our lives. I know it may not be nice,
yeah,
kind of what you get, but it shows you that you are on the right track, and people who tend to pick holes tend to have flaws in themselves. And that's pretty much,
yeah,
you know, but as you say, just carry on going, and other people around you will see that. When I see anyone on stage or someone in a prominent position, even before I got into presenting, I was like, I can just imagine what it's like before they even turn on that camera.
Yeah.
And most presenters are not like, right, okay, then let's come and do this. There is a battle, or actors or singers.
Yeah.
But the reason why they do what they do is because they enjoy and love it, which is what you do. And I can see that you do that. Thanks. Definitely. And I would say your performance throughout was really consistent, and it was really transparent and so believable, and you just like such a friendly person. It really came across, and I thought, when I meet you, I know I'm gonna get the same vibe, definitely.
Oh,
and it's got to be part of you, and that's me, from me to you. Amazing. Just carry on doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
And then in terms of your confidence and your wisdom, and how important is it to remain true to yourself? You say your truth and you like to live your truth.
Yeah.
How important is that with all that wisdom and confidence that you have?
It's so important. I feel like in the industry, there's so much fakeness that happens. People pretending they're this, or they could do this for your career. And we had like a red table talk with Ryan, and he just sat us down before we opened up on the Royal Court. He sat us down and he just gave us the truth, because he also performed at the Royal Court, and he said, when I was here, people would feed me lies or get me to go to this type of party because they're like, oh, we can make your career whatever. And he said he found himself in the most awkward positions and places where he never wanted to be. And he just said, when you live your truth and you do what you need to do, you won't find yourself in them positions. So Ryan, boy, that talk really woke me up. And I said, do you know what? I'm not going to be gassed. I'm not going to do things I wouldn't normally do. I'm just going to be myself. And if someone don't like that, someone don't like that.
That's it. Because we can't please everyone. Can't but please there is that one person, or many, or a mass of people, you can change their whole life by you doing what you're called to do.
Yes.
And that's what helps me every day, because I think if I don't do what I'm called to do, then someone, even if it's just one person, and I remember posting on a channel once, and this one person said, I just need that. And when I mean channel on Instagram, I really needed that inspirational post for the day.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm so glad that I posted that, because I don't know how that person would have felt on that day.
100%.
And just on the topic of like mental health, because this is what the play explores.
Yeah.
And also it explores this to increase the understanding of the topic and also to also reduce the stigmas as well around it and how people feel, I can't talk about my own feelings because other people will think that there's something really wrong with me.
Yeah.
Actually, it's normal to go through the motions in life. Absolutely. And the challenges. And also to, it also explores ways that people can help themselves and learn where to get help if they need it. And I know there's organizations such as Mind and Shout, and there's many more. And this forum, I would say,
yes,
it felt like watching a play was like a therapy session. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
It was wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And seeing it, all of the actors on stage. And so in terms of like the issue of mental health and for Black boys, it's very specific. What's your message from the play that you're drawing from this for anyone that's kind of listening or watching?
My message is, I always say, this is a quote that I always say, jump into the world of the unknown and know that you're going to land on your feet. And just like a lot of people who come and watch this show, not really expecting what they're going to get from it, when they leave, they get something. So, yeah. I don't know where I was going, but that's
yeah, you've got there. So you jump in the world and you land on
the world
of
the unknown and know that you're going to land on your feet. Yeah. It's the message of just keep going, believe in yourself, and be truth to yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so, so what next for you, Manuel?
What's next for me?
Oh, I see your name in lights.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what's so crazy? I come from a family of performers. So my sister's on the West End. She's in the play That Goes Wrong. My older sister, Emma, she's a presenter. My brother's in the industry. My two brothers are in the industry. I would just love to do a family project.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And when you say that, I just thought of the family cook-off. I would just love to be at the family cook-off. That's what I thought about. I thought, oh, everyone together, everyone talking, everyone singing, then everyone eating food, having fun, talking.
They say to work with your family, but I don't know. I just would love to just do a show myself. I've been writing, but I'd just love to have my sisters and my brothers, and we're all just acting together. Yeah, that would be.
And then just seeing that, and you know how you've kind of described it, coming from a family of performers. So it seems like the pressures of you must go down a route did that even crop up?
Do you know what? I say I was the trendsetter.
Oh.
I started, and then my older sister, Emma, got into acting. And then we were acting together. And then my younger sister, Rosemary, got into acting. I remember just going, hold on a minute. I was the first. What's going on? But yeah, I love them to bits, and I couldn't see myself in the industry without them. So yeah, I'm very grateful.
So I'm looking forward to this, you know, this follow up.
Family show. It will be a red table talk. That's what it'll be.
Oh yes, looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So you're actually starring in the production right now, and I'm gonna name it because I love the title. So for Black boys who have considered suicide when the hue gets too heavy. So we were talking about the hue.
Yeah.
Okay. So with the hue, what's kind of your message on that? Your final message.
I think the hue is like a stone. Bear with me. I'm going somewhere. Don't know where I'm going.
I'm with you.
It's like a stone, and the hue is the pressure, and you have to have pressure to turn the stone into a diamond. So I feel like the hue is that pressure before you get the end result. Yeah, I don't know where I was going, but I was going somewhere.
I'm with you. It's going a bit like the copper.
Yeah.
For the copper to become refined, it has to go through.
It has to go through the process.
That's the hue. That is the hue. But coming out of the other side, as you say, your analogy for kind of jumping into the world
of the unknown. Yeah,
that's it. It's all coming out.
Yeah, the hue is the color. The hue is what you want it to be. So if you feel like the color of your skin is too much, just know that with pressure, your skin is going to become a diamond in my eyes.
Yep.
So,
and you make a reference to King a lot in the play.
In the play, yeah.
On your kind of Instagram feed, you talk about you being a black boy. Now you're obviously being a black male and you're representing.
Yeah.
And so for any aspiring black male from any heritage, from different Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean, they can be from a mixed heritage, what would your message be for them? And I know this is a message for women as well and everyone, but what's your specific message?
My message is, don't wait. Hold on, I'm going somewhere also with this. Don't wait to be crowned and know your crown is already there. I feel like when I was growing up, I would look to celebrities, I would look to so-and-so and be like, oh my gosh, kings, queens, they're beautiful. I want to be like them, not knowing that I already had a crown on my head. And women, I love, if I ever had a daughter, I'll teach my daughter that her hair is her crown and glory.
Yes.
Same with men. We have this crown, tiara, whatever you want on your head at birth. And you need to know that when you're black or you're born in this world, you're born into royalty.
Definitely. And I love that saying which talks about adjusting one another's crown. If it's falling, you adjust it. You don't pull it down. Adjust your crown.
That's my message to let everyone know.
Well, thank you so much, Emmanuel, for coming on AJ Sound.
Thank you for having me.
Sound Booth. It's amazing talking to you. And I know that you've got to be on stage in a few hours.
Yeah.
Getting into your mode of pitch.
But I have certain methods to get into pitch. A lot of it is shrimp. Pitch like shrimp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have like a shrimp dish. Like, oh, I found it.
Nice, nice. You're making me, I'm hungry now.
Yeah, sorry.
Shrimp.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. And I wish you all the best. And I can't wait to see what comes next.
I just can't wait for the future. It's bright.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Listen to AJ Soundbooth, the podcast, on Phoenix FM and other audio streaming services.